Blog Talk Radio.
It's due time with Pastor Steph.
Time with Pastor Steph. How are you this morning? That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. For this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. So, where were you yesterday? Yesterday we were talking about the poor librarians who are struggling now in the libraries as they are losing their mind. The libraries are safe these days. You have across the nations many, many, many librarians are now losing their peace. And when you get to the point where in even the library you can't even have a level of peace, times have really gotten bad. You know, the exasperated librarians are dealing with all kinds of chaos and melee in the libraries. You know, this here is different. You know, this is really a turn. And, you know, some people might say, well, you know what, the churches are under attack. What makes you think that the libraries can't be as well? And it's true. It's true. You know, we've talked about the fact that there's no place that's safe these days. And, you know, they are dealing with all types of violence inside of the libraries now. They have even found shell casings, as well as a gunfight broke out in one of the libraries. You're talking about all kinds of even sexual issues going on in the library. They found masturbation to pornography in the library, just a feet, you know, a couple of feet away from the children. They have found people using drugs in front of the children in the libraries. You're talking about literal sexual intercourse. You know, it's really across the nation. You know, it's not even one, you know, one area. You know, you've got Brooklyn, you've got Long Beach, California, you've got Florida, you've got Colorado, you've got, you know, Tennessee. It's just all over the place. And, you know, it's really sad because no place is sacred. And we've talked about this here on It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. We've even had, you know, a story we did not cover yesterday, but I did actually see, you know, in the news, you know, where there's an elderly lady who was pushed down some steps, you know, of a church and robbed and her car stolen. And it's just no place is sacred anymore. No place is sacred anymore. And you can really throw out any level of peace unless you really have the Lord. It is just that cut and dry. Really that cut and dry. And, you know, we talked yesterday about, you know, just the airport and the dogs, you know, these quote unquote service animals. So, you know, you're not even traveling in peace, you know, where if you have any level of allergy or fear of dogs, that matters not, because those who need, quote unquote, these service animals, you know, is, you know, they're the ones who get priority, and everyone else kind of goes down the drain. And Shanti's brought up a really good point, you know, yesterday about, you know, our need for these animals and how we actually, you know, now that's not the way it was designed to be, you know. And, you know, we talked about, you know, this is a case where we were to have dominion over these animals, and yet they're the ones who, you know, are now having the dominion over us, where we can't function without them, and that is definitely not God's design. So we are really under some serious, serious twist of God's plan. And I don't know, you know, if you've taking Christ as your personal Savior, but the more we look at this world, the more we see that this is not the way God wanted it to be. Not even a little bit. So my advice to you is come on, come on, come on. Let's get this thing together, because we have got to take our rightful place here on earth. Yeah, we're not supposed to be subject to anything. We have been made just a little below the angels. So, woo, you know, when you think about it like that, it's like, well, what are we doing? This world is in such chaos because we've allowed the prince of this world to reign the way he is. And he may have that title, but he does not necessarily have to have our life. Oh, that was big. He may have that title, but he doesn't have to have your life. So it's up to you as to what you really want. What do you really want? Do you want to, you know, take God at his word and allow him to be the head of your life, where you can get that peace beyond all understanding? Got to. You gotta take Christ, because if not, we will fall victim to this world. Okay? All righty. And that's how we spent our Let's Talk About It Tuesday Church Folk Day. So, today is Wow Wednesday, and we are here, everybody. Yes, we've made it to that, what some people call hump day. And we don't have to worry about what is going to happen today because God has already planned our day. Yes. So I don't know about you, but I'm glad. I'm glad to have God as the head of my life so I can let him do his thing. And I ain't got to worry about how I'm going to make it. All right? All right. I hope you... Are you on that bandwagon with me? I sure hope so, because we're going to get this day started. Yep, we're going to go get that healthy breakfast. We're going to go tell somebody that it's due time where Pastor Steph is on. And whatever you do, don't go anywhere, because we will be right back.
This is the story of a boy who didn't talk for a long time. The boy liked things to always be the same. Any changes would scare and upset him. The unknown was an unfriendly place. The boy was very sensitive to lights and sounds. So he built secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. The boy didn't like looking people in the eye. He wasn't trying to be mean, it just made him feel uncomfortable. Sometimes he would flap his arms again and again.
One day, I found out I have something called autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I found my voice and learned all the ways I could live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org.
Good morning and good morning again. Welcome back to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. And it is Wow Wednesday, everybody. Yes, God has been so gracious to each and every one of us. And we have made it to the middle of the week. And I don't know about you, but I am excited and giving God thanks for all that he has done for each and every one of us. And without further delay, we're going to say good morning to our girlfriend Vivian so we can get that socially conscious segment. Good morning, Viv.
Good morning. Happy Wow Wednesday. How are you, Pastor Steph?
I am well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
All right, good. Well, you know what I always ask you? What you got for us today?
All right, today on Socially Conscious, we are starting off with some updates. The six-year-old who shot his teacher's story is back in the news as a former assistant principal at Virginia Elementary School has been charged with felony child neglect. This incident happened a little more than a year ago, and a special grand jury in Newport News found that Ebony Park showed a reckless disregard to the lives of Rich Neck Elementary School students on January 6th of 2023, according to indictments unsealed on Tuesday. So Parker and other school officials already face a $40 million negligence lawsuit from the teacher who was shot. Her name was Abby Zwarner. She accuses Parker and others of ignoring multiple warnings that the young boy had a gun and was in a, quote, violent mood, end quote, the day of the shooting. So criminal charges against the school officials following the shooting are quite rare, they say. But Parker, who is 39, faces 8 felony counts, each of which is punishable by up to 5 years in prison. So 5 years each. The lawsuit alleges that the former principal had no response, that when the teacher told him, he refused to even look up from what he was doing when she was expressing her concerns to him. They're saying that when concerns were raised that the child may have transferred the gun from his backpack to his pocket, the former principal, assistant principal, said his pockets were too small to hold a gun and did nothing. The lawsuit states a guidance counselor also asked the former assistant principal for permission to search the boy, but Parker forbid him of doing so and stated that John Doe's mother would be arriving soon to pick him up. So now, with all his lack of concern and action, he may be going down, facing felony charges of neglect for the students that he put in danger during that day. A second update of Ethan Crumbly, that is the teen who drew dark images of a gun, a bullet, and a wounded man on his math assignment, accompanied by some concerning phrases that he put on his math assignment at Oxford High School. That young man was not taken home by his parents, even though the teachers, you know, were sharing their concerns. The parents came in, they spoke to the staff, and they just walked out. And during that day, Ethan shot 4 people, killing them. And he is now serving a life sentence for murder and other crimes. His parents were recently each sentenced to at least 10 years in prison this Tuesday for failing to take steps that could have prevented the killing of the 4 students in 2021. So Jennifer and James Crumbly are the first parents convicted in a U.S. mass school shooting. And they were found guilty of involuntary manslaughter after prosecutors presented evidence of an unsecured gun at home and presented evidence that the teen's mental health was actually known by his parents and they did not do enough to get him help. So they have just been sentenced to at least 10 years in prison for the role that they played in their child's mass shooting occurrence. Now we are kind of heading down in the MTA as Mayor Eric Adams is hitting the headlines again as he says New York City's youth should be stepping up to support the city's efforts in addressing mental health and homelessness in the subway system. Adams recalled a conversation he had with a young woman who asked him, what is he doing to improve the mental health crisis in New York City subways? He responded by telling the young lady, let me ask you the question differently. What are you going to do? Adams recalled telling the young lady, how about you get a group of your friends? How about coming out one day and walking with us and interacting with these people who live in the subway system? Young people need to be leading this battle of some of the crises that we are facing in our city, he says. They say on average only 6 felonies are committed with around 4 million subway riders each day. He spoke about the police. He added the NYPD needs to improve how it handles people in distress and the transit. Adam said people who clearly need help in the subway system. So there were no specifics given about how the youth can help, where they can go for the help. So maybe this was just one of those ask not what you can do for your country, but ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country type of answers. I don't know. But, yeah, he's pushing for the youth to get involved with what is going on down in the subway systems and saying that they need to be more involved in that and helping with this crisis. Interesting statement. Next, we have the migrants in the headlines, as several migrants were arrested after illegal guns and drugs were found in a Bronx basement apartment. Reports say officers were initially called to the building on March 27th about a man with a gun. And according to authorities, officers found the man and another man with firearms at the building. Police said that they identified one of the men as 24-year-old Hector de Solvalida, a migrant from Venezuela. So he has been arrested in Yonkers last year for allegedly shooting a man and was charged with attempted murder and assault, according to the chief of police. The case against this man never went forward, and he was later released. Police identified the second man as Javier Albornoz, a 22-year-old man from Venezuela. He's also a migrant who was arrested back in September for allegedly having a loaded firearm in the Bronx. A judge released him on his own recognizance. So several guns, including a ghost gun, boxes of ammunition, and cocaine were all discovered by investigators in the basement, according to the police. Police said two people were initially arrested, but 6 more were taken into custody after a search warrant. All 8 people were charged with criminal possession of a weapon, criminal possession of a controlled substance, and acting in a manner that was injurious to a child, because they say that they found at least one child inside the basement apartment while all of this was going down. The landlord of the building says that he was unaware of the group being in the basement, and he says that he has been in court trying to get who he knew was in there out, as they were squatting in his basement apartment. So he has been fighting to get them out of there for a while, but had no idea of what was actually going on down there. So this is basically a piggyback story of the several stories we have been talking about with the migrants, and now adding in the squatters as well, and how they are just allowing these migrants to walk free. And now we have this going on. Next, we are out in Chicago, as they are offering free group therapy to migrant families. Reports say Chicago has received an estimated 38,441 newly arrived migrants since June of 2023. A public health ambassador has said, quote, they are seeing a lot of things, a lot of trauma, a lot of rape. The children are going days without eating. The parents are going days without food. They are walking through a jungle. We are having cases of malaria coming in, broken legs, people coming with all types of issues. So to be better addressed, they have collaborated with CPS Parent University to start a weekly community healing circle that will provide a hot meal and free group therapy to asylum seekers. They will also be located in the same building as a shop that will be selling items for the migrants in an effort to help them get things like diapers, shoes, and books, nourishment, and now therapy so they can thrive in the new society that they are coming into. And the therapy sessions will take place every Monday starting April 22nd at the CPS Parent University in that vicinity. And now we have our wow story of the week, a listener-submitted story. Very interesting. A judge had an idea after a woman was found guilty of assault when she became upset that her order was wrong and dealt with it by throwing a piping hot burrito bowl into the cashier's face. So the lady's name is Rosemary Hain, and she is 39 years old. She was found guilty of assault after violently flinging her food at Emily Russell, who was working behind the counter. So Rosemary apologized at court before going on to say, quote, "If I showed you how my food looked before and how my food looked a week later from that same restaurant, it was disgusting. It looked disgusting." So this is why she's claiming she did what she did. Videotaping of the chaotic September assault, which also went viral online, was played during Haynes' hearing. So she was sentenced to 180 days in jail. But the judge offered to suspend half of that if Ms. Haynes agreed to work in the fast food industry. She said that she would give her 60 days jail credit if she agreed to work at least 20 hours at a fast food restaurant for 2 months. The judge says, quote, "So I thought, why should the city taxpayers pay for her and feed her for 90 days in the jail if I can teach her a sense of empathy? I also hope deters others from this type of behavior." So Ms. Rosemary did agree, and she has to find a job in a fast food restaurant in order to serve out the sentence, and she will serve the remaining time in jail. And I thought this was interesting, but of course, we want to hear from you. What do you think about this judge's decision, and where else can this be applied? Where else can this logic be applied? Where taxpayers, you know, shouldn't have to pay for someone to be in jail and eating well after they've made the decisions that they've made, but instead having them, you know, wear somebody else's shoes to see how that feels. But this has been Vivian with Socially Conscious, giving you the news that we are following. And remember, if you have any wild stories you would like to submit, please feel free to direct message me. My username on Facebook is Vivian BM, and come back every Wednesday to find out if your story has been chosen. Thank you, as always, to our loyal listeners, and thank you, Pastor Steph.
Wow, thank you, Vivian. Thank you. Came back with quite a bit. Thank you so much, and you'll be joining us in our round, so welcome. Let's see what the ladies have to say about all of this here. Let's say good morning to our Elder Natisha. Good morning, Elder Natisha.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well, thanks. How are you?
I am great. I'm great. Calling in from England this morning.
Yeah,
wow.
I was like, wait, we got to see a face this morning. I was like, oh, wait a minute now. We normally get to see, like, some view, and we got to see you this morning. I was like, is she saying she's in England? Well, excuse moi, as they say. Well, how's the weather?
It is. It's similar to what is being experienced in Chicago and New York at this time. It's like the high is 61 and the low was like 37 degrees, and cloudy and drizzly. The sun will come out and then it'll rain, and so it's similar.
Okay. I should have been in your backpack. Oh, I missed out on that one. Oh, my goodness. Well, giving God thanks that you have traveled safely, and we pray that your stay is safe and enjoyable, and you accomplish everything that you set out to. But thank God for the travel experience. Thank God.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. We've got this six-year-old story of, you know, the little boy who shot the teacher in the school. And this went on. This story went on for pretty much all of last year. Now, they've dealt with the mom. We know she's been sentenced, and we talked about that. Well, now they're holding the assistant principal's feet to the fire. We covered this story, over and over and over again, about how not only was this particular teacher, the woman who was ultimately, you know, shot and who is now suing, but others complained about him and this gun and him having the gun and please let me check the backpack, so forth and so on. And this vice principal said, I remember that story where they said she, was it a male, Vivian, or a woman?
The assistant principal?
Yes.
I believe it was a woman.
Right. Okay. I thought I remember it being a woman, and they said that, thank you, they said that she never looked up from her desk, and this was there were several complaints of them going to her, and she just brushed off. This little boy should have had the parents there. Normally the parents accompany him at school, but this one particular day, nobody was there, and now they're holding her feet to the fire, and she is under criminal charges, 8 felony counts. Whoa. What do you think? Do you think she should be held accountable? Do you think that, you know, she did the best that she could? What's your thought now? Because, see, they're moving. This story and the next story is showing how they're moving to hold more people accountable for the actions of these students. What's your thought?
I think that it's appropriate to hold people who have responsibility to protect others accountable. I think from the parent to the assistant principal, anyone who was aware and made aware of any potential threats, and you were not vigilant in regards to making sure that no one in the school was hurt or injured, I think, no, this is so important that we make examples out of, unfortunately, these people who did not do everything within their power to ensure that others were safe. And so I do think that by showing an example, it does set a precedent for, you know, any other situations that may arise, to be more vigilant, to be on top of it, to don't just dismiss it, to don't just think that, oh, it's just a child, he's just 6 years old, and just act as though there's no viable threat there. So I think that this is an important move, an important step that will help set precedents.
Okay. Let's see if the ladies agree with you on that point. Let's say good morning to Lady Tamika. Good morning, Lady Tamika.
Good morning. Happy Wow Wednesday to you, to our ladies, and, of course, to our listeners. How are you today?
Good morning to you. I am well, thank you. How are you?
So you want to get in Elder Natisha's backpack. I want to get in her purse. She don't have extra charges for this.
Yeah, we all going along for this ride. Oh, my goodness gracious. What do you think about, you know, you were part of this conversation on many occasions last year regarding this six-year-old shooting the teacher occurrence. What's your thought now that, you know, the higher ups are being held accountable?
Yeah, you know, in this day and age, everybody has to be on point. You know, you're not just there to make a paycheck, you know. And if you knew and you saw and you did nothing, then you get it, you know. I think that it's right for her to hold those that have reign and rule in those areas accountable for the role that they did or did not play. You didn't even look up to see what was going on. And then when they said to you, well, you know, let's at least search, you know, maybe her complaint is not founded. Let's double check and see. You didn't even allow them to do that. Then, yes, you definitely should be charged.
All righty. Shantice is on board this morning, and we're going to hear what she has to say about this. Good morning, Shantice.
Good morning. Good morning, ladies.
How are you?
Good morning.
I'm fine, thank
good
morning. You. How are you?
Good. I'm well, thank you. What say you about this, you know, assistant principal being held accountable for what they are considering negligence?
Absolutely, because it was negligent. It just sounds like complete laziness. You weren't even asked to search them. Someone else said, I want to do it, and you said no. Was it because had there been something, then you would have had something to do? Because then it would have been out of the whoever wanted to search hands. You, with your position, you would have then had to, you know, do whatever you needed to do on your end. But that's all I hear is just laziness. And because of your laziness and your negligence and you figuring like, well, I shouldn't have to do this or there was nothing that blatant. If you have multiple people coming to you saying the same thing, they didn't even come to you talking about different children. Everybody kept coming to you talking about the same child. At no point did you say, well, let me take a gander into something. So I see why they would want to charge her with anything. I agree with it.
Okay. Vivian, what's your take on this whole thing with the teacher? You know, you're in the school. You deal with the little people. You know, was this something that was so far-fetched that, you know, possibly this assistant principal said, you know, listen, you know, the gun was too big to be in his pocket. Y'all are overreacting. And now look how wrong we were. Should she be held accountable?
She should be held accountable because you had not only the teacher, but multiple people come to you and tell you that he's in a violent mood. We believe he has a gun. We just witnessed him move what could have been a gun from his backpack to his pocket. And even if you thought, oh, these people are crazy, you should have at least checked. Even if it was just checking, like, let me just show y'all that y'all are losing y'all mind. But something mm-hmm. should have been done.
Okay,
something should have been done.
Okay. All right. Well, the ladies have spoken. It is unanimous. The assistant principal needs to go down. Ooh, well, unfortunately, she wasn't the only one who went, you know, going down. If you remember, someone else, I think it was a superintendent or someone, resigned after this particular incident. So, the tower is crumbling. Well, some other individuals are being held accountable, and we talked about this incident quite a few times last year. And the Crumblies, this is the first time where there's a student who actually killed some people in the school, and now they are holding the parents accountable because the parents were called into the school and left the child in the school, didn't take the child home. I remember this story very clearly as well. Well, the Crumblies are going down for 10 years, at least 10 years in jail. Lady Tamika, is this something that is far-fetched? You know, this, they didn't actually commit the crime, but they're going down anyway. What do you think about that one?
Well, we have often talked about parents taking a role, you know, in your child's welfare. You know your child is unstable, and, you know, you do nothing. You know, there are outreaches that you can, you know, when it says that you didn't even try at all, you know, you left the child there knowing that there is a concern, you know, and so it was, did you throw your hands up? Did you just say, okay, you know, well, I'll get back to you later? We understand that you have a modicum of stress. However, you can't just leave your child there, especially knowing, and it's been expressed to you that your child is showing some type of behavior. You have to take accountability, you know, and, you know, nobody wants to take responsibility. No one, as we can see, you know, people are not doing their job. You know, they're belittling the situation. We're at a day and time where what you think of or what you can not quite fathom is now happening. And so you can't get lax and say, oh, well, I'm just going to leave it for somebody else to say, leave it for the babysitter. You know, babysitters at this point, you know, are not like they used to either. And so you as a parent, you know, it you know, the sad part about it is you have to take responsibility for your child. And when you just say, well, we're going to leave the child there, then, yes, you should be charged. Correct.
Okay. Ah, wait a minute now. We got, I don't know if we lost Shantice or not, but we're going to go to Vivian, and then we'll come back around to Shantice. Vivian, you know, I remember specifically there was this issue of these parents, the father leaving the gun in the child's, his son's reach. You know, this was an older child. It's not like the six-year-old. And they're being held accountable for this. What do you think about that part?
I think they should be. I think they should be because they proved, in, you know, during the trial that the parents were aware that there was something mentally going on with him, that there was some type of mental illness. They proved that the gun was left in his reach. So absolutely, you knew that your child needed, you know, mental help, and you allowed the gun to be in his possession by leaving it in his reach. So they absolutely should be held accountable. And you had an opportunity to stop this because you were called to the school. They showed you and told you what he has been doing, these disturbing pictures he was drawing and the things that he was writing. And you decided to leave him there because you didn't want to deal with him. And now he done turned around. You walked out the school and he turned around and shot up the school. So they are responsible. Absolutely. It could have all been prevented if they did their job as a parent.
Okay. Well, Shantice is back. Well, I'm going to take this a step further, Shantice, because I keep hearing something, even from back then, that is very disturbing to me. So I keep hearing, y'all didn't take him home. We showed you the drawings. We told you how he was acting. We told you. But you didn't take him home. I'm going to switch this around. How come you didn't put him out and send him home with the parents? How about that one, Shantice?
Absolutely, because I'm not looking at those pictures in my classroom, let alone being an assistant principal or a principal. And there's no way a child is sitting in my classroom and I'm seeing pictures like this, or they're writing vulgar language on a piece of paper and that happens to come across my eyes. They would be mad at me because they'd be walking through the hall, but like, why are you standing outside this classroom? Well, Ms. Morrison kicked me out. I definitely did. Oh, I can't do it. I guess you kicked me in the whole rest of the... Okay, so how about he stays and we'll have class at the nearest park? Because I'm not... When he decides to come in here with the trench coat, I don't want to be here, and I don't want to be responsible for the other students who I could have done something to help them, but I didn't because I'm ignoring it like everybody else. Absolutely not. Yes, the parents should have taken him home. But again, for your own safety, even if you didn't care about any other student or any other faculty member in there, for your safety, why did you feel comfortable? That didn't haunt you for the rest of your day? When you went to go eat lunch, when you went into that teacher's lounge or that faculty lounge, and you went to sit and heat up your lasagna, that picture never came back up in your mind, ever. Like, everyone was flabbergasted when he came back up there shooting. It is ridiculous.
Elder Natisha, you know, if you compare the first story to the second story, so you got the first story where they're blaming the assistant principal, and now you have the second story where they're blaming the parents. It seems like we just throwing this ball across the table like a ping pong table tennis is going on. Everybody's responsible. Well, how do you see this? Mm-hmm. Is it just the parents who had a responsibility that day?
Absolutely not. If it takes a village to raise a child, then we partner in this, and we are all responsible with identifying any behaviors that can cause a threat or harm to everyone within the community. So whether that is within the community of the family or the community of our school, we got to work together in identifying when, you know, our young people, our littles, are exhibiting behaviors that are deadly, that are unhealthy mentally, emotionally, and then we've got to be able to isolate them in order to get them the help that they need. And I think that's the problem, is that we move slow because we don't want to be quick. And I could say this specifically for Black and Brown communities, that I think we try to be slow with putting labels on our kids, because for years they've been labeling our kids, and then it's hard to remove those labels, because then you have kids who perhaps had a behavioral problem, not a mental or a mental issue, but had behavioral issues, who were labeled, given medication, and this carried a stigma with them for years to come. And so because of that, we've gone to the extreme now where we don't want to be quick to put labels. And I don't think we should be quick to put labels, but I think we do have to read the writing on the wall. If it is obvious mm-hmm. that there is a problem, then we've got to be willing to say, he is a threat to the school community. He cannot be here. You got to take him, and you've got to find him help, and vice versa. Parents, you've got to be able to identify. He is a threat to our family, and if he's a threat to our mm-hmm. family, then he's a threat to the school. So I'm going to be responsible for getting him the help that he needs. So I do. It takes a village to raise a child, and if we actually still live by that, then all parties are responsible for identifying behaviors that can hurt the community, regardless of
absolutely.
What community it is.
Absolutely, absolutely. It just again, seems like this ping pong. You know, I don't want to be the one to say it. I don't want to be the one to do it. And now, mm-hmm. unfortunately, you now have lives that paid for that lack of decision-making. All right, Mayor Adams is back on the rotation here on his due time, and you have a young person asking him, as the responsible individual, what, Vivian, you came back with Pastor Buck today. You know, she asks him, hey, you know, what are you going to do about, you know, this mental health issue and crisis in the subways? He turns to her and asks her, why don't you do you know, your due diligence and get your friends together and come on and go on this tour and address this mental health in the subway system crisis. Have we lost our mind, Shantiz?
No, it's really hard for me to look at him or think of him and think this man is doing great because of stuff like this. But this ain't got nothing to do with whatever good you do behind the scenes. How are you coaching a young girl to go up to strangers to do what? To say what? To talk about what? Now, there is a hidden, you know, like, had it been something said like, well, this is what I'm doing, such and such and such, you're not on here teasing them, right? You and your friends are not on here bullying them, right? You haven't seen any of, like, your classmates on here, da-da-da, but you haven't reported it, right? I could see something like that being asked. Because we do know that a lot of these kids, they will antagonize a lot of people, unfortunately, just because they want to act ignorant. But someone asked me, because they know the position I'm in, and they have some, they're able to determine that there's some level of responsibility that I do have, and obviously, according to her, I ain't been meeting my responsibility, or she wouldn't be asking me this. But instead of me being able to say, well, I've done this and I've done that and we're about to implement this and that, I now look and put the responsibility back on a young person and then a young female. So I'm expecting for a young female to go and approach, not every homeless person is hostile, but we don't know that. They don't walk around with, I'm a hostile individual, a thing or tag on their clothes. But you're really suggesting this. This is just another way to now turn the attention away from not doing. And what you did was just make it even more evident of what you're not doing.
Mm. All right, Vivian.
This was just another one of those moments, excuse me, where he did not think before he spoke. Because that is not a plan. You have these stories every single day of what is going on down there in that subway system. People are being pushed in the train for no reason, slashed in the face, attacked. It is just wild. And for you to suggest that the youth get together and go down there and call themselves trying to solve some problems was not a smart remark. That was just not smart at all. And he needs to do better with his speeches, because that just don't make no sense to me. I hope he didn't walk away thinking like, yeah, I did that, because, sir, please, get it together.
Oh, my goodness. Elder Natisha, we've been told that he does a whole lot behind the scenes. Does it matter with that answer?
Not when you are unable to show up public facing. So part of your job as mayor isn't just what you do behind the scenes, but it's also how you lead a people, how you encourage a people, how you motivate a people. And so I think his responsibilities are twofold, and I think he is miserably failing when it comes to his public-facing responsibilities to be able to actually lead a people, motivate a people, encourage a people, and provide hope to a people to that he serves, that elected him. And so to just simply, again, here we go with these lack of thought out solutions that aren't solutions. They're ill prepared and they lack wisdom and thoughtfulness. They're not well thought out. What's the plan to this? What are you talking about? And so you, to just throw out something in hopes that somebody will say, oh, he got a plan. No, that's not a plan. That, what is that? You're putting them in danger. You're having more kids be put in danger. That's not a plan. That's not how you move a people forward. So, yeah, he's failing in that part. Good if you're doing things behind the scenes, great. But your external platform and how you're supposed to move a people, you failing, sir.
Lady Tamika, I'm sure you heard, you know, some of the wonderful things that have happened behind the scenes. Unfortunately, that we don't get a whiff of, but they sure enough putting this stuff out there. What say you?
I think, honestly, when he was asked about something like that, now, I'm just going to give you a situation that I'm aware of. You know, I am a traveler. I do commute by train from time to time, you know, and I'm going to give you a scenario. Like, going towards my old high school, and they still do it, between the hours of 2:15 p.m. and 3:30, there are youth everywhere on the subway. If you ride the A line, the C line, you'll find them, you know, and they're everywhere. You know, it can be a little scary for anyone who's not familiar with, like, okay, what's with the influx of youth? You know, we get that. But then my thing is to say to a youth, it's your responsibility to take care of what's going on out there. I've also seen, just riding the train, minding my business, that's one of the best places to teach people watch, but also be quite prayerful because, you know, you kind of see the signs. When somebody's sitting on a train talking to themselves, you know, they're uneasy. They're walking. Now, mind you, the train is moving. They're walking from one end of that same car to the other end of the car. You see it. And, you know, you govern. You automatically know, okay, you by sitting there, you know the temperament of the atmosphere. And you're like, okay, something's about to break out. Something's about to, you know, jump off, you know, that type of thing. And then for you to say, well, it's the youth's responsibility. Come on out there. They're out there every day. They see it. They know it. And so for you to then say to these youth, well, it's your responsibility to get out there and do what, you know, how are they supposed to stop? You're also talking about youth who are untrained, you know, and based on their responses can act a multiplicity of ways, which can escalate a situation. I honestly believe that at that time, he was caught off guard and feeling attacked, and at that point said, well, you need to get out there on these streets. You're not talking to a government official who has authority, someone who has been trained, who has had the psychological, you know, knows what to say to someone who appears to be unstable, how to get them back on track. And I honestly believe that, you know, in that he's trying, his response at that time was not geared towards the right set of people.
Oh, my goodness. In keeping with the continuity of this conversation today, Shanti said it before on this broadcast, nobody wants to do their job. And I don't know about the rest of you ladies, but I personally am tired of watching these people paid to push responsibility. It is safe to say that no matter who you are, no matter what your job is, and let's take the first two stories. You got the assistant principal, and you have the parents of this young man. They weren't the worst parents in the world. I'm sure they had, at times they were very good parents. I'm sure she wasn't the worst assistant principal in the world. I'm sure at times she may have even been given an award for doing her job. However, there comes a time when you really going to be seen for who you are And that's what happened in the first two instances, and that's what's happening again and again and again and again, unfortunately, with this mayor. You know, for so long we heard, oh, you know, he can't help it, and oh, he's doing the best that he can, and oh, you know, he has a lot of responsibility, which we know. Any job you take, you got a lot of responsibility. It ain't no different than any other job. You know, he's black, so he's carrying a bigger load, and people have more expectation of him. Good, bad, right, wrong, or indifferent. It comes a time, there will always come a time where you will show exactly who you are. Can't nobody make no excuse for it. Can't nobody paint a different picture, because no matter what it is, no matter who it is, no matter what you do, you will always show who you are and what you are made of. Right here is exactly who he is and what he's made of. There, it's almost like a child going to their parent and saying, Ma, we're supposed to eat every day. And I see the money coming in. I know you're going to work and you're getting paid, but we're not eating. And then the parent looks back at the child and goes, well, are you feeding your brothers and sisters? You got a job. Why don't you take your check and feed your brothers and sisters? This is what he's made of. There was a million ways he could have responded. And I go with Lady Tamika. He didn't expect for her to ask him that. He didn't expect for her to say that to him. And I'm sure he felt attacked. Oh, yeah, because this is where we go. Oh, she came up to me and she asked me, hey, you know, well, what am I doing for the mentally ill in the subway system? She was asking the right person the right question. She has every bit of expectation, because you're the mayor, whether you were white, black, Hispanic, Asian, it didn't matter who you are. That's your job. You're the one down there who keeps saying, oh, the subway system is safe. Well, it would be safe to a person walking around wearing a jacket that said, I'm the mayor, who has tons of detail in right at his hand, at his arm's reach. She did exactly what she was supposed to do. She asked him a question, and he failed miserably. He could have answered this. If he said, I don't know, it would have been better than asking her that question. So you know what? He didn't lost as far. That did it for Stephanie. That did it for me. You want these children in the trenches? Lord have mercy. When the children are part of the problem, stop. Stop. All right. Well, here's another one I'm putting in his pocket. Now, maybe somebody else wouldn't put it in the pocket. I'm putting this in his pocket because they have these judges who are continuously letting these people go. You've got two more migrants who have stood before a judge or who have been arrested for gun possession, so forth and so on, and these people are still walking the street because when they were arrested, they were turned loose. Vivian, you've got the story of the migrants in the basement with the baby and the drugs and squatting. Yo, whose responsibility is this?
It's his. It definitely is. I just hope that more stories continue to come out of things like this, so that they can get it together. Because why are we allowing them? The man was charged with attempted murder and was let out. Are we serious? And now he has the ability, he has the availability and the freedom to go and take over somebody's basement apartment and pretty much start a game down there, planning what God knows what, because y'all just letting these people do whatever out here. So I hope these stories continue to come out because something needs to be done. This is absolutely insane. Not only was that child that they found in the midst put in danger, but how many other people were put in danger because you just keep letting these people walk free after they have been caught, not accused, not somebody came and said, I think, but they have been caught committing crimes and y'all just keep letting them free. This is absolutely insane.
Elder Natisha.
I'm sorry. I missed this story. I'm trying to capture it. Can you give me the synopsis of what happened here?
Hey, Vivian, I'll let you do the honors.
Yes. So they, they found a group of migrants that were squatting in a basement apartment. They found them in there with a young child and a bunch of guns and ammunition and drugs. Mm. And several of the people that they winded up arresting from this incident, they found out were once arrested for other crimes that they committed and were just let free on their own recognizance. And they were migrants.
Thank you. And so they were let free. So they were arrested here, not in their own country. They were arrested here and just let free. And okay. And what's the question, Dr. Seth?
my question is coming off of the last point, the last story that Vivian gave. How does this now trickle into your people consistently allowing these migrants to face a judge, but they're like, okay, go. We're going to let you go.
Wow.
And who should we now hold responsible for all of this?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it still boils down. It takes us back to Mayor Adams with just not having a full plan that gives everyone just plain point out instructions on how we are to handle these type of situations when it comes to the migrants. Because I think there is discrepancy with, okay, are they held to the same laws and standards that Americans are before they are institutionalized, well, not institutionalized, but before they are introduced to our system. So if we're assuming that these people have come in over the border or they've come in whichever way they came in, they've not done the necessary requirements and study in order to get a green card and learn about the systems and things of that nature. And so if that be the case, then how does the judicial system, when they're showing up in the courtroom, how then are we supposed to deal with these people? I think it boils down to a lack of clarity. A lack of clarity from all angles. We're seeing it in the justice system, but we also saw it when they just got here and nobody knew what to do with them, and they're on, you know, the sides of the street and things of that nature. So I think it ultimately boils back down to a lack of clarity. However, to go with the theme of what we've been talking about, how are we keeping our people safe? How are we keeping our people safe? Send they behind back. If you came here for opportunity, then get the opportunity and make of yourself. But if you come here to be a nuisance, you can go back home. So even if we didn't know how to deal with them, send they behind right back. Okay,
right.
Back.
Right.
Go. Period. Back.
Absolutely.
You go. Because you're not going to come over here and run in mayhem, adding to what already exists here. If you come in here to be a part of the production of what we do here in America and to make and seize opportunity, okay. But the moment we find you with illegal weapons and all this other kind of stuff, you go back, buddy. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Lady Tamika, you know, here's another squatting situation where – you know, the landlord says, hey, I knew about two people. I didn't know about nine people. And I have no say because I'm scared. I'm actually fighting the system and going through the process of proper eviction. But not only do I have squatters, but then I have violent squatters. How do we handle this?
I'm not even going to talk about the landlord or the homeowner. You know, I'm going as far back as us, meaning that if I let you in my home, you know, and I have an established rule, I have an established what goes on, you know, you don't go into my refrigerator, you don't, you know, you don't just decide to run water for an hour, you know, and you sitting on the toilet, I mean, water's just running. You know, there has to be some rules that were established. We've been saying this time and time again ad nauseum, you know, and, you know, it just kind of seems like, oh, well, we'll just let it pass. Nobody's going to say anything. You're going to turn a blind eye. You know, you release them. You don't do your part, your due diligence. So then what happens is you allow the tenant to run ramshot, which is basically what's happening. This gentleman, his hands are tied. There's really so much that he can do. There should have been rules established prior to these people coming here. We've been saying it for the longest time. They're being offered resources. Now, I'm not talking about those that are coming here that are trying to make a living, that are doing what they need to do to make it. Those are not the people that I'm addressing. I am addressing the individuals that come here and you just want to do whatever it is you want to do. You want to sell drugs, you want to steal, you know, prostitution, you know, these type of things. Then those are the people. When you have an offense, you know, don't question. You know, do what you need to do. Do your research. If you're going to incarcerate them, then incarcerate them. Send them back. Why are they still here? That's the thing that gets me. You release them for them to do it again. You know, then you have recidivism that keeps happening because I have nowhere else to go. I have no job, you know, and all of my hands are tied. So what am I going to do? You know, if you're not doing what you need to do, figuring out the rules, being advised, you know, then you need to go back home.
Shantice, we're talking about them being arrested, them being caught, them being found out their agenda for being in the United States. But instead of being deported, they're just being allowed to go back out and continue business as usual. How do you move forward like this when you have the judicial system that is not doing what they're supposed to do?
I'm starting to believe this is a setup by the man to take us out, because what business as usual? You ain't got no business. I thought that's why you came here to America, because you ain't have no business where you came from. So now you here. So now you're here,
oh,
and then you're complaining
gracious.
That it's not, you're not set up the way you thought. So where's the business? Okay, so now you're knowingly releasing them to still have idle time. And I was always raised, I used to hate this saying back then when I was a teenager, but I was always told idle time makes for idle minds. So when you're sitting there, you either want to get high, drunk, or kill somebody. So you're now going to release them with a mind to do all of the above, because of course you're upset. If those of us who work, or God has given us something to do, we know what to do, and we don't think that we're, the outcome is what we feel it should be, and we ready to slap somebody, what do you think they're going to do? And they don't have no purpose as far as what they know. So I'm really starting to believe y'all had them come over here so they can start killing us. They're willing to live a lot more what's the word? Frugal. You know, their standards are not as high as ours. So it's like, okay, if they take them out, at least we ain't got to worry about offering this and that and this and that and that. Because they're willing to take whatever we're willing to give, because that is just stupid. So now I release you. I'm the judge that say you can go ahead, but then you the same one to come back and kill me. No, because I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. and not even on purpose, but because I ain't got nothing else to do but just sit here and do stupid things with no plan, anybody can get it now. That doesn't make any sense. Again, nobody wants to do their job because it's going to take more work for me to assign you to this facility, and then God forbid someone say that facility is packed, so now I got to look somewhere else for you to go, or I got to put you in a program, do all that. It goes right back to you don't want to do your job. It's just so much easier for me to say, be free. That is just dumb.
You know, I haven't been at that one round. I actually commented. But I just would like an opportunity to ask one question. Why? Why? And to do what? You have a person who is standing before you who has been caught, like any other American individual, is brought to you because they've been caught. Now you are releasing them. My question is why, and then to do what? That's all I want to know. I would love to hear an answer to that. All right, ladies. We're going to merge this last round. We've got the story about Chicago is now offering free group therapy. And, you know, they're seeing that the migrants are, you know, coming over and they're experiencing trauma. They're offering a therapy session that will take place every Monday starting the end of this month. They are going to provide food and therapy and allow them to shop to buy items that are much needed. So what do you think about that offering? And you have the story of a woman who threw her piping hot food in the employee's face. And she apologized in court for what she did, but said that, you know, you should have seen the way the food looked. She was sentenced to 180 days in jail, but was offered a suspension of half that time if she agreed to work in the fast food industry instead of the taxpayers paying for her to be in jail. In other words, walk in someone else's shoes. Maybe then she would get a different perspective. Who we have to? Elder Natisha, which one are you going to take?
Let's talk about the woman who obviously has issues that would decide to treat another human with such disrespect and the way that she did, simply because she didn't like the presentation of the food that she received. There was a much better way to deal with that situation than to throw piping hot food in the face of the server. Not even the person who prepared it, but you threw it in the face of the server, the one who actually brought the food to you. You could have asked for a manager. You could have said to her, do you think that this is something that I should be eating? Like, look at this. Could you please take this back? Like, we've lost a sense of regard and respect for humanity to where we can be okay with getting angry and allowing our anger to cause us to move into other spaces that now put us in the hot seat. So if you thought the food was hot that you threw in the girl's face, well, or in the person's face, well, look how hot it is for you right now. with you getting 180 days sentenced. And I love the idea. I love the idea of taxpayers not having to take care of her while she's in jail. I do think that she wouldn't have no choice but to eat whatever they slapped on that plate, so that would have been humbling her as well. But I do think to put her in the public and have her be a server and have her to develop that empathy, as was stated in the story, I think it's a good idea, because we do have to get back to what it means to care about other people. We've lost that.
Okay, okay. Vivian, which story would you like to take on?
I'll take the server, the woman who threw the food in the server's face. I also like the idea of the taxpayers not having to pay, you know, her way while she's in jail, but having her walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. The only thing that I would have added is that she does not get to choose where she works. I think that, you know, it should have been maybe a list of places in the right neighborhood where she would have to work, because we don't need you going, you know, finding some nice restaurant to work in just to fulfill this obligation. No, these are the places that you need to apply to, and this is where you need to work for the time that you agreed upon, so that you can really get a feel of how it feels to be in that woman's shoes. That's the only thing that I would have changed. And I think they need to apply this to some of these parents when it comes to teachers, because they just don't seem to understand what it is like to be in a class of 20, a class of 10, with all these children, and they look at you like you're crazy when you want them to come pick up their kids for whatever reason. So maybe if they, you know, walked a mile in our shoes, they would understand us a little bit better.
Okay, okay. Shantice, you've got your wish. Ah.
Amen, amen. I've been saying this needs to be mandatory after everyone gets their diploma, GED, certificate. You go back at 70 and you get the program where you get your diploma and associates. Everybody should have to work in a restaurant for at least 2 weeks. Because I said it's either going to stop you from going out to eat, or you're going to change the way you are when you go out to eat. Because, again, going out to eat is a luxury. It is not a necessity. So I love it. I would have her in particular starting out in the back. Like, that is the worst. You could not be a cashier if it's a fast food restaurant, or you could not be a server if it was a dine-in restaurant. Because, no, that's too luxurious for you. You would have to start out in the back. And anyone who knows about the restaurant industry, nobody wants to work in the back unless you choose to work back there. But no one who wants to be in the front is okay with being in the back. But I love it, because it's definitely going to show her why she needs to walk with humility. Because there's a whole lot of industries out here, ain't nothing like serving people food. I don't know what it is about that, but she's about to get a rude awakening. I love it.
It's funny, when Vivian brought that up, I was like, oh, Shanti's about to get her wish. She's been saying for years. She's like, I just wish people would just have to work in the restaurant. So, maybe this will teach her. You know, I found an article last night that I thought was real interesting, and not knowing what Vivian was going to bring to the table today, I think this is an interesting connection. And the article is about how people see you the moment they see you. You know, what do they say about you? They say, you know, just within a minute of seeing you. And, you know, many of these stories today can definitely fall into that. But my question is it a fair assessment, you know, for people to kind of rate you immediately? So they have people judge how much they should trust you after only just meeting you. And we're going to start with you, Vivian, because we have you. Quickly, within the next few minutes, people judge you based on, you know, but within the first few minutes of seeing you, they based whether they should trust you or not. Is it accurate, and is it a fair assessment?
um, uh, I would say it's not accurate and it's not a fair assessment. We can be very quick to judge people in the first couple of seconds. And then when you really get to know them, it's like, oh my goodness, if I went off of what I thought about you and I didn't take the time to get to know you, I probably would have missed out on a lot. Because, you know, you just be walking down the street and you see somebody and you're like, what are they up to? You know, you just, your mind is just quick to start putting labels on people. So I don't think that it's a fair assessment to say whether or not you can trust a person within the first few seconds of just seeing them. You got to take a little bit more time to really find out if you can trust the person.
Okay. Elder Natisha, we're talking about trust. Within the first few minutes of seeing a person for the first time, you know, people say they assess whether they should trust you or not. Is that accurate, and is it a fair assessment?
No, I don't think so, not based on what trust is. I think trust actually takes a little bit more time. You know, I think you can make a first impression, you know, but I don't think that that leans into trust. Trust is much more deeper than that and requires a little bit more time. I think, you know, it can go either way. Either you can trust someone, you know, too soon, too quickly based off of, they got a trustworthy face. And then, you know, get pickpocketed. Like that happens all the time. You know, people ask for directions and you're thinking, oh, let me help this little old lady. And you didn't realize she set you up with her grandchild to come. I don't know that we want to be just, you know, taking, establishing trust off face value. I think it takes a little more time.
Okay, okay. Shantese, should a person make a decision as to whether they trust you within the first couple of minutes of meeting you, and is that a fair assessment?
No, because what are you basing the trust on? Like, we just look at people and say, I trust you to take the next step, or I trust you to start walking with your left foot before your right, or I trust you. It's like, what is the trust, you know, being based on? And a lot of the times, too, you know, us as Christians, we're cautioned to always make sure we're presenting ourselves in a certain way because we never know who we're going to come across and so on and so forth. But a lot of times, you know, we don't know at what point in the day we're meeting someone, if they just got finished dealing with something, if they're about to deal with something, you know. So if your demeanor is off because you just got finished dealing with something crazy, but now I'm judging you off of that, it's like, okay. You know, and I've heard that plenty. I've thought that plenty of times where it's like the initial thought I had of a person was like, oh, I really won't, you know, and I didn't treat them like that. That is what came to mind. And when I got a chance to really be around the person on multiple occasions, it was just like, oh, okay. Or they, or maybe that was just an off day, or they are still a little off, but they have the potential to, you know, be better because they do have a real cool side to them, but they just allow that to overshadow it. So, you know, but you have to allow time to be able to really help you assess that, not just off. My grandmother was like that, and it used to be the funniest thing. And it would be crazy, too, because I don't really remember her necessarily being wrong, but it was just, she just always spoke too quick, and that's what always threw people. Like, it would literally be, hi, this is so-and-so, and immediately, if she nodded, then you were good. If you got that twisted up face, you knew that was it. But it was just like, but there was like, no, she did not miss a beat. It wasn't no, oh, hi, and then maybe 5 seconds later you got a reaction. It was so immediate. And we would all be like, well, what is wrong with you? And like I said, I don't ever remember her necessarily being wrong about the person, but it was just, you spoke too quick. So now it just always made you seem like you was just completely bugged out, because from the second the person said hi or you were introduced to the person, immediately you let it be known how you felt about that person.
Oh, my goodness. Lady Tamika, we're talking about the fact that they say that you can spot certain things with, you know, people make a judgment about you within a couple of minutes of meeting you. And one of the points that they're making, they say people determine how smart they think you are right after meeting you within the first couple of minutes. Is that accurate, and is that a true assessment? Can you assess somebody and how smart they are?
No. You know, you look at somebody and, you know, you see a situation, you assess a situation. Oh, they're so smart, they're wise, you know, such and such and such. You know, and if you follow them a little later on, you find that you start looking like, why did they do that? That doesn't, you know, doesn't equate to what they just did 5 minutes ago. You definitely can assess somebody from the couple of minutes that you think that you've got it. Oh, you've got it all together. You do not. People are complex. I come from a environment with a brother who I have often said from time to time, he's switchy changing. He's a little 7:30, you know, kind of undiagnosed, you know, and he'll do smart things, but every now and then, you know, I literally tilt my head like, what's wrong with you? You know, and so you definitely can't get the whole. It's like, you know, reading a book from the front cover. That doesn't tell you anything. You know, a lot of times you'll find surprises in the middle, you know, or close to the end, but you got to read that book. You're not just going to look on the first page and say, oh, well, because it says such and such and such, I've got it. No, that's definitely not a good assessment.
Okay, okay. All right, Vivian, we know you're on your way out, so we're going to give you an opportunity to hit it and quit it. Can you assess a person and how smart they are within the first couple of minutes of meeting you? And is that a fair assessment?
I'm actually here for the long call. I'm home today, but you gotta at least let them open their mouth, and before you can make an assessment how smart a person is. If you just going off the looks, then no, you can't. But within the first couple of minutes, you could probably get an idea. You could probably get an idea of how smart this person is, how much sense they actually have. But within the first couple of minutes, if you haven't really, you know, taken the time to listen and really watch them, then no, you can't make a fair assessment. Because people can do things, you know, that wasn't the brightest idea. But that doesn't necessarily make them, you know, stupid. This wasn't a bad, you know, it just wasn't a good choice. But no, you can't make a fair assessment within the first couple of minutes of meeting someone on how smart they are.
Okay, okay, okay. Shantice, what say you?
I don't know. I was trying to ask the Lord why the other ladies went. Because I didn't... I done heard some things within the first couple of minutes. I done met somebody, and it's just like, Lord, please let me know if I'm talking like this, because I don't want to hear that I'm stupid, but please let me know if I sound stupid, because some of the things that, and I understand, at the same time, I understand why, if God would allow us to be able to have that discernment to hear if someone is really challenged when they speak, of course, because if he's asking us to minister to them, you know, we don't know if they're going to be, if this is going to become a friend, or if we're going to have multiple opportunities to speak to this person. So if God is saying, I want you to minister to this person, and this may be a one-shot deal, I'm going to have to know immediately what level you want. You know, I'm going to have to hear some things in order to know what to pray about, because God teaches us targeted prayer. We don't just say, okay, God bless you, have a good day, hope you make it to the kingdom. No, we got to get detailed. We got to hear some stuff. Now, I've been hearing some stuff. So I think it's safe to say that you can, including yourself, you can determine the level someone is on when they're speaking the first few minutes that you meet them. And because people have become so impulsive, and because people have become so, like, I'm noticing that, and I'll say we, because this is what I got to say, for the Lord too, because we've gotten into like this microwavable mentality again, and it's becoming a lot worse, where it's like I'm mad if things don't happen within the next 30 seconds, so now my logic is just thrown out the window. That alone will help you sound a little stupid when you speak on anything. So I think it's safe to say that nowadays, yes, God is like allowing us to be able to determine where someone is. Even if so, we don't think this is someone I should be speaking to. And God is like, no, did you hear what they just said? No, I'm going to need you to exit stage left and do not entertain this person. And we have to make sure we're staying alert.
Okay, Elder Natisha. Within the first couple of minutes, can you tell how smart a person is? And is that a safe assessment?
No, there are levels to smartness.
oh, my goodness.
There are those who are street smart. There are those who are intellectually smart and have no common sense. There are those who have no wisdom and divine insight from the Father. I think there are levels to this word that we say, you know, we use it as smart. And so absolutely we can't determine that immediately. I think, again, what we can determine immediately is, you know, like, you know, that first impression of, like, where, you know, where you tend to lean. A person... Because the first couple of words out of a person's mouth can let you know, whether they're racist, whether they have biases, whether they are ignorant, like just the first couple of words, you're like, okay, got it. So I think
absolutely.
It's first impression, but we can establish, you know, your smarts off of the first couple of minutes, because there's levels to this.
Okay. Well, they say that you can tell if a person has an aggressive personality by the look on their face. You can be able to tell that in a couple of minutes. Lady Tamika, you still with us? You got first dibs at this one.
I'm sorry, I didn't, you can tell, can you repeat that for me?
You can tell how aggressive a person is. You can tell if they have an aggressive personality by the look on their face within the first couple of minutes of meeting them.
That may or may not be true. I've seen people that look real stable, but for whatever reason, you know, that a lot of times the expression on their face is literally not what they're thinking, you know. And so you, in this day and age, especially in areas like New York and Chicago and other areas, and I'm not picking, but I'm just saying because this is where we are, you need to be very careful. Don't just judge an expression. Don't judge a book by just the cover, because there's a whole lot on the inside.
All righty. Vivian.
I would say no, because when I first met Shantice, I thought she was a very nice young lady. But when I got to know her.
Oh, goodness gracious.
No, but I would say no, because, you know, people have a lot of facial expressions that they don't even realize. People always say I look mean when they first meet me because I just have that, you know, resting face. But no, you can't really determine how aggressive a person is by the faces that they make, because sometimes we're not even aware. So no, you shouldn't go by that.
Okay. Elder Natisha.
I'm cracking up at how Vivian went over the rest of the resting face. But I agree with what has been said thus far. You know, for a couple of reasons. Like, you got people, depending on what part of the world they're from, they could just have hard features. You know, there's some... Based on the hard features, you know, you can make a determination about somebody and be like, why are the eyebrows dented in? Like, see, in the U.S., that looks like a frown. But for them, it's not that they're frowning. It's just this is the structure of their face, that their eyes, you know, is kind of. So I think that there's, you know, we can't just look at a person and come to that conclusion. You really do. And I love the analogy that Tamika continues to give, that you gotta open up the book and see what's inside. You can't just look at the cover and think that you understand the book without ever reading a page.
Okay, and Shantice.
Well, after being raised by my grandmother and my mama, I got to see like two different types of pictures on the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And when you looked at my mama, it was always just like, oh, okay, you know, another lady, la, 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 la. And when you looked at the other two, it was just like, well, who y'all getting ready to fight all the time? So I really had to, like, learn how, you know, like, because I knew them, you know, I knew, like, okay, their face is like this because it's Tuesday. Or their face is like this because it's got this cussing somebody out. But on the normal, I think this is why God really talks to us about the way we present ourselves, because we are responsible for the impression that we give off. So because we do know that there's some people where it's just like, I don't know, it's like now, because it's like everybody's just angry now, it's almost like safe to assume everybody's got attitude, but you can't just label, you know, someone like being angry. And I was just, as the ladies were talking, I was thinking about being in high school, and it was even in junior high school, but there was just always like a certain type of look the quote-unquote cool girls had, you know, the it girls had, where it wasn't necessarily mean, but it was just like a prestigious type of look on their face. And then when I finally got a chance to speak to some of them, it was like, oh, you're a geek like me. Oh, okay. But had you just looked at their face, you know, they just walked around with this face like, I'm in this elite group. You can't talk to me. You can't sit next to me. You can't, you know, I don't belittle, you don't wear name brand, I don't want to talk to you. Like, that's what their face is like. So you have to be careful about how you present yourself, but because of that, no, you can't just necessarily assume that they're aggressive or mean.
Okay. And finally we're landing at, they say people may be able to tell how religious you are within minutes of meeting you. Lady
Tika. Oh, yeah. I got a big old Bible and a huge cross, you know, and so because you're looking at me, you automatically assume, you know, that is the farthest from the truth. You know, I've even seen instances, I remember at a place where I used to work where, you know, a lady who declared herself, you know, an atheist. You know, and she looked as pleasant as I could be, you know, and, you know, you can't, again, you know, you're gonna judge a recipe by, oh, that looks so good. You ever had something that somebody served you, and you're, oh, that looks so good. It smells so good. And then you put it in your mouth, and you're like, where's the garbage can? Can I have a piece of paper tissue? Stop pretending you cough, you know. So, again, you have to be so very careful in this day and age, because what it looks like doesn't necessarily mean that that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Shantice.
Within minutes, they know how religious you are?
Yes, ma'am.
I would say yes. The verse that's coming to mind is, I think it's in James. I'm paraphrasing. When you're going through your trials, your tribulations, whatever, your faith is put out there in the open to show what it really is. So if I'm walking around with a you know, an upset thing. It doesn't mean that I don't have the right to be upset. It doesn't mean I don't have the right to, you know, be mad at someone or something. But if I'm walking around with this now, again, it goes back to understanding that at any point, even in the midst of us being justifiably pissed off, God will use you to talk to somebody. Or if God sends someone to talk to you. Now, we can't say, well, if God sends this person to talk to me, it shouldn't matter how I look. They should still do what God said. That's not fair, because now you're possibly making the job a little harder. So I would say yes. If I'm walking, even in a church, even if it's not a church setting, I'm sorry, even in the street, and you looking like, okay, let me stay away from you, and then I find out your sister, Maureen or something, there's a problem. There's a problem. We really have to make sure we're really careful, again, how we're presenting ourselves, because if God is saying, even if I don't know it, but, okay, I tell you to walk to the boulevard, and I'm going to have someone come talk to you, but then when they look up at me, and we just went over this in service a few weeks ago where I just got ragged on by God through the pastor, because I told them, I don't like when I'm sitting on a bus and you come sit right next to me. Why are you sitting next to me? Don't come sit next to me. So my face is kind of saying, don't come sit next to me. But then the question was asked, how do you know God wasn't leading that person to come sit next to you because he wanted to talk? And it was like, all right. So now I have to change my face when I'm sitting on the bus, and I have to make sure I have a welcoming face where my face pretty much says, hey, come sit next to me, and not don't sit next to me. Because now if I turn that person off, I get charged for that. And again, I may not have another opportunity to speak to this person. So we have to really be careful. Be careful.
All righty, all righty. Vivian, can a person tell how religious you are within minutes, and is that a fair assessment?
I would say no, because, you know, growing up, you were told that, you know, if you're a religious person or if you go to church, this is how you dress and things like that. But now, because of the way that they're trying to pull in so many people, people don't even dress, you know, how they used to back in the day. They go to church wearing jeans and crop tops and, like, just regular clothing. So people are not looking their part anymore, so to speak. So, no, you cannot tell how religious a person is just by the way that they look, because they could be very religious. They could have a wonderful relationship with the Lord, but they just don't dress, you know, what you may have put in your mind that this is how they're supposed to dress. People not dressing like that anymore. So, no, you cannot tell how religious a person is just off of the first couple of minutes of meeting them.
Okay, okay. Elder Natisha, what say you?
I think what comes to mind for me is 1 John 4. Test the spirit to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. And so with that, I do believe that there is, by way of discernment, that we are able to test the spirit and see whether it be of God. I don't think that it is within our human ability. If we're looking through just human eyes, I don't think it's possible. But I do think it's possible when we are trying the spirit by the spirit within the first couple of minutes, for a couple of reasons. One, that when the spirit of God rests upon us, there is a glow. There is something about us that is different. It's what, before we even have to open our mouths, the anointing of God resting on us allows for it to be seen, and we become attractive. And so I do believe that, you know, I've experienced that on many occasions when a person would just, I didn't interact. In fact, I'm like focused. My face is stern because I'm focused on what it is I'm trying to accomplish, what it is I'm looking for. And then someone would say to me, what church you go to? You know, and I've not said anything, but it's by way of discernment, being able to identify, seeing the anointing of God, seeing the glory of God rest upon our lives. And I think that does speak to the depth of our relationship with Jesus. I think if you have spent time with God, you don't leave out of his presence looking the same way you went in. I think you leave the presence of God with a glow, with evidence. Because God wants that evidence to be there so that he can use you in the world. Not necessarily that we need to be going out, trying to figure out, turning over rocks to figure out who we can evangelize to each day. But if we spend time with God and allow God's glory to be evident in our lives, we become attractive. People come to us, and then there's room and space for evangelism, for conversation. So I guess to answer the question, no, if we're looking at it through a human lens, no. But when we implore our spiritual discernment, then I would say yes.
Okay, okay. Thank you so much, ladies. Thank you so much for your contribution into today's conversation. And we pray you have a blessed day.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy your trip, Elder Natisha.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All righty. Okie dokie now. Let me get these mics turned off. Oh, let's get that benediction first before we go into the closing. Where are we? May you grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. To him be the glory both now and to the day of eternity. Amen. 2 Peter 3:18. You know, listen to the ladies go through their explanations and their understanding of, you know, whether we should be able to rate, because people just misuse this word, judge, rate a person within the first couple of minutes. And Elder Natisha landed where I thought of all along. And I thought of discernment. That's where my head went. My head went to discernment. And I thought about the first issue of trust. Can you trust a person within the first couple of minutes? You need to be able to. Now, are we talking about a thorough trust, a trust in order to engage into a relationship? And I'm not necessarily talking about an intimate relationship, but just a friendship, you know, any level of partnership. That may not be, you know, you may not be able to tell within the first couple of minutes, but if you're talking about just a basic trust, you better, because if not, you're going to end up behind the eight ball quite often. You know, I've been, my mother, like Shanti's brought up, you know, I said to her, I actually said to the congregation, she had a lot of wisdom. She didn't realize. And because she didn't realize what she had, she didn't know how to apply it, and she didn't know how to use it. She underestimated it. For her, it was straight street. You know, it was like, listen, this is how she grew up. You know, this is how the streets taught you. You better watch for people. You better, you know, she's sizing you up, like Shanti said. You know, when you were saying hi, she was sizing you up. And basically, that's what we're talking about here. That's basically what we're talking about. But, like I said, where Elder Natisha landed is where I was. My thought was, are you assessing based on godly eyes, wisdom, and understanding? I've had people say, you know, I saw so-and-so walk, and they look so shifty. They look like they was up to no good. And can I tell you, they weren't. You know, like Shanti said, 99% of the time, my mother wasn't wrong. She just, the application and the way she executed it wasn't the best. But if you're smart, if you tap into the wisdom of God, you will know whether you can trust someone or not. And most times, you're not wrong. if you go with how God is leading you, when something tells you, you know, something's not right, you know, that's that discernment that we've always, you know, we're always talking about. And that's that will lead you to whether you should trust a person or not. Now, will we always get it right? No. Why? Because we will always somehow or another slide us, like Elder Night Teacher said. You know, when we start looking through, you know, earthly eyes. And I'll give you an example. How many times, and I'm going to put this in the woman's lap right now. How many times has God sent a man or God allowed your path to cross for you to bring a man to the Lord, but yet you sleeping with him? See, this is what we do. You know, something tells you that you need to be connected, but then you take and you go off in another area. So, you know, I'm going to use that here, you know, in regards to the discernment, the trust. You know, how many times have women said, oh, that's going to be my husband? It's like, okay, why? How we get here? You know, was it meant to ultimately be your husband? Possibly. But not immediately. You know, there's some channels and some steps to have to go through. So I'm kind of putting it out there in this particular area. But that trust thing is really a discernment. Is what are you, you know, looking at, and how are you looking at this thing? Are you making proper application? And again, we're not talking about a long-term trust, because a long-term trust takes a lot. It takes a lot to be able to really trust a person and put everything into that relationship. And like I said, I'm not talking about intimacy. I'm talking about just even a friendship. How many times have you trusted someone you called your friend and they've done such and such a thing, but yet there was something that told you not to do it? Don't listen, y'all are just friends. Don't go into business. But because your eye, you took your eye off the prize. You took your eye away from what God was showing you to say, well, you know, we've been in, you know, we've been friends for, you know, 20-something years, and I should be able to go into business. No. So always take, and we can apply that to the smart thing. We can apply that to, you know, whatever we've talked about, you know, the religious, you know, people. You know, again, it's discernment. It's what is God showing you? You know, I definitely agree with the point that was made about, you know, do you have a relationship with the Lord? People can say quite often, you know, something, there was some, when you finally tell somebody that, you know, you're in the Lord, or you go to church, or, you know, as some people say, I'm saved, or however you term it, they'll say, I knew there was something about you. You know, or they may, like Elder Night Teacher said, they may say it on their own without you even, you know, telling them who you are. And they'll say, you know, something about you that led me to believe that, you know, you were the right person, or, you know, I should talk to you about this particular thing, or whatever have you. You have to always lean on the discernment of God, whether it's trust, whether it's religion, whether it's the person is smart, because at the end of the day, you cannot judge a book by its cover. If from a mere mortal, as they say, you know, just a carnal level of thinking, because there are some times when we trust people and we shouldn't. There's some times when we shouldn't have, but we did. So, you know, how many times have you made that mistake of judging a book by its cover? You were wrong. You know, you could have thought bad and found out that they were good, or thought good and found out that they were bad. So that's something that you really have to lean on God for. I'm going to say this in my closing. Sunday night's prayer was huge. I've never experienced anything like that. And God revealed some heavy duty stuff that I am still digesting, and actually really exposed some things to me. And it's funny because I did not know it in the way God put it, but something was telling me something was off. So again, lean on the discernment of the Lord. You will never go wrong. You've been listening to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. where we discuss matters of the heart, mind, and spirit. As you go through your day, be sure to set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. They will only serve as a distraction. Remember, prayer changes things. It's Pastor Steph signing off, and I want to thank my Due Time crew for always coming through big time. Thank you for hanging out with us and helping us do what we do. Please do not miss this opportunity to give Christ your life. Please do not miss this opportunity to strengthen that relationship with the Lord right now, because later is not promised to any of us. Until tomorrow, God spares, with Therapeutic Thursday, I love you.